Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Drive Through HR. William, whatever my name is, Brian, and Nisha. The hard questions, right? I'm not hitting this today. So let's get to our guests, for God's sake. Patty, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Thank you, and you even have a new song. I love it.
Yeah. See, you shook me up before the call, right?
I know.
You rocked my foundation because I want to hear about what you have to say. So I'm so excited. I want to get to you right now. Talk. Go. So, welcome. And if you could introduce yourself to our family of listeners.
I would love to. So, hi everybody. I'm Patty Johnson. And I am the CEO of People Results, and we are a change, human resource, organizational development, all the people side of the business consulting group. Before that, I spent most of my career at Accenture, and I've always kind of spent my time on the human side of the business as well from the early days. And then now I am on my next little journey of being an author. So, and I live in Dallas, Texas. You can probably tell I'm from Texas based on my accent. I can't hide it.
Do we have to refer to you as author? Do you now need to be introduced to you? Does your husband, your kids, do the people that live in, you live in Southlake, I think, right?
I do.
Do your neighbors need to now refer to you as author, Patty?
No, trust me. The crowd you just mentioned, they're just like, whatever, you know, you're doing your thing. So, yeah. No, I don't think that's going to go over too well.
Yeah, I have that. Every time I come home from a conference where I've been put up on some golden pedestal as this beacon of thought leadership, and I come home to the domesticated side of my life, which I actually really love. But
yes.
it's a deep fall off, I would tell you.
It is a crash, no doubt.
Basking in that glory and all that adoration, and then all of a sudden, not so much.
No.
Patty, we're going to do some. As we talked a little bit about in pre-show, we're going to do something a little bit different. We're not going to do the typical what's keeping you up at night. We're going to do that later on in the year. We'll get you back on the show.
Sure.
And do that bit. You've written a book, and Brian and I are super supportive of everything that you've done and all your the blog articles that you put out into the marketplace. And so
we just really
want to talk about the book. So tell
sure.
us, bring us into how did the book come up? What is it? What's it about? And,
sure.
and we'll kind of ask you questions about that.
Yeah. Let me just I'll give you the headline. It's the headline is Make Waves, Be the One to Start Change at Work and in Life. And I spent about 2 or 3 years working on it. And the gist of it is that, you know, if you look at a lot of big changes that have happened in organizations, communities, whatever, you just kind of keep dialing it back to the very beginning. Like, how did that start? Often you can get it down to one or two people who may have done something even relatively small at the beginning. And so I started getting really interested in that. Combine that with the fact that anybody in business can sometimes, I think, relate to this. I had been in so many discussions about big changes in organizations, and we were talking about a project plan. We were talking about what the leaders needed to do. And it just felt like that whole piece, like, you know, to really make a change happen, you got to have dozens and dozens of people throughout the organization feeling like, you know, they're contributing to it. They're bringing their own ideas, and it's not just all a command and control. So those things kind of started to converge in my mind. And then, you add into that what's happening around us. It seems like so many of us, like outside of work, we operate in a certain way, whether the way we use social media, the way we collaborate and work with other people, and everything's just different than it was even 5-7 years ago. But so many times in business, especially some of those bigger organizations, it felt like you entered into another land. And so all those things were sort of swirling in my head. And that started me down the path of writing the book and figuring out how can you translate that so other people, someone could read it and think, you know, okay, well, what can I do? What can I really start within my circle? So that's kind of that's the broad brush of Make Waves and kind of how it came about.
What do we get right about change? What do we get wrong about change? Mm-hmm. And specifically, what are the myths about change that we have?
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of myths. I think one of them I just mentioned, that change is a project plan, that it's sequential. And I think it, when you really kind of get down to how does it really happen, it happens because people decide either to start something, change something, or get on board with yours, you know. So that idea that you can project plan your way through a change, you can get a good portion of it. And having grown up at Accenture, I love a good project plan. So don't, you know, I'm not degrading that in any way, but you can't just, not all sequential and orderly. So I think that's one myth. Another one that kind of flies in the face is this idea that, you know, we always think of like these strong leaders. These are the people who have all the answers. They come in. They know exactly what we're supposed to do. We're going to take the hill. And actually, when it comes to a change, because it's different than a you know, something on your to-do list. I mean, you're trying to get other people involved with you. If you have that mindset, that actually works against you. And I think I loved one of the quotes in the book that one of the Wavemakers made was, you know, the kiss of death is to show up and say, good news, everybody, I have all the answers. And because automatically then it's not our thing, it's my thing. And that mindset, even though we don't always show up and say it that way, sometimes our behavior signals that. So I can go on. Those are a couple, but those are big ones.
So two questions. One is there a maturity model to change? I mean, is there an early part or phase of change?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a long tail of change. What does that look like conceptually in your mind? And secondly, personalities. I'm really big on personalities these days. Are there people that are more adept or suited for change, et cetera?
Let me take your first one, and then I want to come back. I think I have to have a good discussion around this, you know, kind of these behaviors or what I call the DNA of the Wavemaker. You know, I do think on the maturity, one of the things I think we get in the mindset of, we think about the big changes, and so many individuals will think, well, I can't really influence that. That's too big. But if you trace back so many changes and keep dialing it back, no, before that, where did it start? Often it started with a small decision or action, somebody experimenting with something, somebody trying and testing, could we try it this way? Could it work? Making a recommendation in their meeting, in their circle, and then it works and it spreads. So I think sometimes we think about changes as just being too big instead of there might be within one big organizational change or transformation, which every leader is talking about, you know, there might be within it, you know, there might be 20, 25 little mini phases within that. And sometimes you build up enough momentum, yeah, you have to have leadership sponsorship. And it's got, I like your maturity curve analogy because it gets to a point where, you know, it's more than you can do. But that's the way it's supposed to work, right? You get started in your circle, and then it can build and kind of go from there. Kind of that mindset, so this one big change event that we move towards. So I love that maturity model analogy. That's a good one.
So the personalities that are best suited for change versus those that are the not so much crowd.
Yeah. Well, for me, in writing the book, one of the things that's so interesting is I ended up talking to dozens and dozens of people who had started changes. And I asked a lot of people that I know, like, who do you know that's a wave maker? And the interesting thing was, when I collected my list, I didn't have a list of all CEOs or all people with a vice president in front of their name. In fact, I ended up with this very eclectic list, some of which I had added to and some other people had added to. And what I found is that when I had that list in front of me and I started doing research from everything from a Major League Baseball manager to a high school student to entrepreneurs to I had some CEOs too, senior people community leaders, when you get it right down, they're all human beings. Get it right down to the individual and say, what did you do? What were you thinking? What did you do? There were definite themes and patterns. And so I identified, and I'll give you the top four. One of them was this ability to look beyond me. They could, it wasn't like, it's not all about me and my personal success and my ego. It was what I called, it's what's in it for us, not what's in it for me. And then it starts, you get to your why. Why do we care about this? Why is it going to make our community better, our team better? And those were people who thought that way. So that's one. The second one was adaptable persistence. And they had this ability to, they didn't blindly charge to their destination, ignoring everyone around them. Instead, they had this idea of where they wanted to go, but that you put the word adaptable with it, they were learning, adjusting, they were getting new information, adapting. You know, we have a lot of conversation about being agile and, you know, incrementalist. They kind of think that way. It's like they didn't mind, they didn't have this pride that it has to be the way I thought about it at the very beginning. They learned and adjusted, even though their goal kind of stayed the same. It's kind of like, I think of it like if you have kids that they're in the maze at the playground, you know, they know they want to get to the other side, but they're just going to keep at it and keep going and keep trying. They don't give up easily. So that was a second. The third
Go ahead.
Can you stop there, William?
No. Go.
Okay, I'll give you the other two, and then we'll stop and talk about these a little bit. The third one, voracious learners. It's kind of related to the other point. These are people that were just diving in and learning about not only their area, but were able to see something someplace else and connect it back to their world and think, you know what, that's interesting. We could try something like this in my team. Also, they didn't, it was also the way they viewed setbacks. They kind of learned from it and kept on going. And then the last one was positive collaborators. And basically that idea that they were kind of able to connect with other people, they saw that they couldn't do it alone, that the change was not a solo sport, they had to get other people involved. And so they found ways to bring other people in. And I love some of the examples I heard, like the language, like, let's plan to work on this together. Here's my idea, what are you thinking? So it was less about, I want to sell you on something, I want you to approve my deal. It's, I'd like to work together with you on this thing. So those are the top four. That's a lot, but I'll stop there, and we can maybe talk about them.
All right. Well, I have a closely held belief that careers don't make sense in the windshield, but they always or almost always make sense in the rearview mirror.
True.
Right? Is change like that? Does it make sense to people? We talk about it and communicate and educate and, you know, pontificate and all the other things. Does it make sense to people? Or does it make, like, through the windshield glass, or does it make sense in the rear view?
Boy, that's an interesting question. My first thought when you said that was, I think it really, it depends a lot on the outlook of the person. You know, I think in their readiness to actually, you know, kind of go into change and be excited about it and see the possibilities. Those are the people that are probably comfortable looking through the windshield. If sometimes I think probably depending on the person, maybe in retrospect, it makes more sense. But I think it's a lot on the person. I really do. Kind of their outlook on work and life.
Yeah, in fact, I wrote down while you were talking about that, I wrote down faith and hope. Mm-hmm. And people that are probably hardwired to either deal with ambiguity or to trust that,
yes,
you know, things are just
going
to kind of work out while they're, you know, but the scientific folks, the hard science folks, you know, they're going to eradicate some of that faith and hope, and they're going to want clarity. So how do we deal with those? Those are more dispositions than anything else. How do we deal with that as HR leaders? How do we deal with those things at work?
Right. I would say that what you do is you aim for clarity during a shorter time frame. So if you think the change that your idea, whatever it is that you're trying to move toward – you know, if you can make have clarity around steps 1 through 4, here's how we're going to get started on this thing. Your destination, your goal, your purpose is very clear. Then I think now there's much more tolerance of that than there might have been in the past, because there's so much more emphasis on, you know, agile project planning and adjusting as you go, and you know, that less about did we check off everything in our project plan, and more about, okay, what adjustments do we need to make going forward? And so you can't be fly by the seat of your pants, let's be clear. I mean, that's not realistic. But I think you start to look at your change in much shorter chunks. You know, and I think that's something that, you know, as an HR leader, you can try to, you know, to encourage that, so that you adjust as you go, you learn as you go. Versus you have one plan and you're sticking with it regardless, because it's really unrealistic. Because the change hasn't been done. Whatever you're doing, if it's a real change, it hasn't been done before. And so you may think you have all the steps and you know exactly what you need to do, but you're probably going to be wrong on something. You've got to be willing to realize that I have some new information now I didn't have when we started this thing.
Patty, do you feel that your change makers correlate to risk-taking? Wave makers, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's interesting that you asked that, because that was one of the things that I thought about. And I think there was definitely, I think there was a risk factor in it. Also, I found the people that, you know, I had several people tell me, I'm not a risk taker. But those were the people that also, they had a big idea in mind. You know, Charlie Johnson, Pay It Forward creator, and has done amazing things with that. He's the one that told me he's like totally not a risk taker, but he had this. He really wanted this to happen, so he was like, I made myself do it, and I got past it because I felt like what I was going to work on was so important that I moved through it. So I would say for most people, risk relative to how strongly they felt about their goal, where they were headed, those two things sort of were very tightly correlated, I would say.
What's the relationship in your mind or through your research
mm-hmm.
between org culture and change?
Yes, huge, right? Because it's funny, I see this a lot. You see a lot of leaders talk about innovation and change and so on, and they believe it, but yet you have so many just systemic obstacles in the organization that keep that from happening. You can't make a mistake, or you get rewarded for this kind of efficiency or production that absolutely prevents you from ever experimenting. And so, you know, I think there's a big correlation between the two. And I think one of the things, you think about the HR community, I think one of the things we can do is look at what are the obstacles that are just sitting there, some of them because they've been there for 10, 15 years, and the way we look at performance or whatever, and start to knock some of those down and make sure they don't stand in the way of, you know, and of what you're really trying to achieve. Now, some of the things I talked about are not really culture, but it's a huge, huge issue. And you don't change culture overnight, do you? So, you know, that disconnect from what you really want to have happen at the most senior levels and at your most fundamental strategy, you just got to, you know, if you have those obstacles throughout your organization, you know, it's not going to happen the way you want it to happen.
All right, let's pivot to the book. Who should read the book? And what do you want them to get out of the book?
Mm-hmm. I think that individuals who have something they want to do, it's a pretty broad, I mean, I think the book is relevant for new graduates. I also think that, you know, the more senior people in business will also find it relevant too. I think the person that's going to get the most out of it is somebody who has some things they want to do. They have some ideas, and it doesn't have to be change the world ideas. It could be, you know, I want to change the way my team works. I want our customers to be more involved in, you know, how we design our products. You know, it could be that, you know, it could be, you know, I want anyone who enters our organization as a recruit or as a vendor to walk away thinking that we are a great organization, even if they don't work with us or we don't hire them. And that changes. It's not like you're in recruiting, it's not, you're trying to weed out everybody. You're trying to make sure that, that there's a good experience. So it just changes your mindset. Anyone who has those kinds of ideas should read the book. My hope is that the book will not only help someone get started with the practical steps, but it also approaches, you know, how you should think about it, which I'm embarrassed to say, when I first started writing the book, I didn't even have the how you think about it in the book, because I've been so focused on strategy and design and process and all in my career, that the more I started doing the research, I realized that how you think about it is probably half of it. And so I think that's an important piece too, to help how you think about it and how can you get started on your idea.
What was the biggest surprise in the experience in writing this book to you?
Mm-hmm. To be honest, probably the biggest surprise I expected at the beginning, when I started having all these conversations with people and research and reading and writing and all about it, I expected the entrepreneurs would kind of be like this, and then the students probably kind of like this, the senior people kind of like that. And, of course, there are differences in scope and scale and experience and all of that. But when it got right down to what did that individual do, I saw so many similarities. It kind of blew me away, to be honest, at the time, because I thought, okay, there were obvious patterns when you look at the college student and the entrepreneur or the CEO. I mean, that in terms of what did they actually do, what were their first steps, and how, you know, it just, there were so many similarities, it surprised me.
So are you going to start, you know, actually go on tour and start speaking around content around the book? Like Rockstar,
yeah.
Tour North America first,
oh,
and start hitting New Zealand,
yeah.
Australia.
Yeah, I have my backup band is ready. Yes, I am definitely going to be doing some speaking, and I won't do that full time, obviously, because I've got clients and business and that sort of thing. But I've loved getting out just really in the past month to start to speak to groups, and it's fun after you've worked on something for so long, you have all these thoughts just bursting out of your head that you've written in this book. It's really exciting to be able to get out and talk to people about it and share what you've learned, hear what they have to say about it. And, you know, almost always, as in this conversation, somebody has something that's like a twist that you'll think, oh, that's so interesting, because that's just another way to build on, you know, some of the things I've put out there. So it's fun. Yeah, I've enjoyed that part of it and plan to continue to do some of that too.
How has your clients reacted to the book? Or, you know, I say reacted, but I mean, you know, you never can tell. It's the unintended stuff that you can really never plan for, the unforeseen, Don mm-hmm. Rumsfeld, the unknown unknowns. So, like, how have they responded to
they've
to
been great.
The
in
book?
Fact, yeah, they have been great, and in fact, many of them were endorsers for the book, which was great. And it's made for some interesting conversations, for sure, about it. And just like we're talking about today, about some of the things I learned when writing it, you know, you end up hearing more of their stories as well. So, no, I think they found it really, really interesting, and, you know, hope that some of them have read it to this point. Others, I mean, the book comes out this coming Tuesday. So some of them have seen it, some of them have not yet, but I hope it'll be a good chance to continue to talk. And some of my clients have built a workshop around it or a speaking event around it. And so it's been fun. It's been great on that front, really good.
So, Patty, this is a selfish personal question for me. So at what point, if at all, did you quit taking advice for people or just like shut that down about writing a book and how you needed to do it?
Well, I have not really. I have shut down the part about writing. I got to the point where it's like, okay, it's due tomorrow. I've got to send it in. But I mean, I met with a TCU professor 2 weeks ago, and he was giving me feedback right then about, okay, on your next one, I think you could do this. I mean, so it almost never stops. I will say you do get to a point, obviously, when you have a deadline and you have to send it into your publisher, there is a point by which I've got to lock this down and get it finished. And I did reach that point, probably I would say like a month or so out before when I had to send in my kind of first final draft, if you will. So, but the sad thing is, that could go on forever if you didn't, kind of like put a halt to it. Because I still see things and, put them in my, have a folder that I keep, on my computer of things I see that I like, and also a folder in my desk. So you just, the ideas don't really stop, but you do have to stop and write and get the dead blasted thing in, right, at some point.
Sure. So any inspirations out there as you were going along over the years that you're like, goodness, that's a good book. That's a good writer. That's a good thought leader that you, that you kind of just internally, kind of look to?
I found so many. And as a matter of fact, I'm always reading anyway, but I probably during the time when I was putting it all together, I read even more because I was inspired by many. I would have to say the couple that come to mind, well, one of them in particular, I'm a big Brené Brown fan, and one of the reasons I really like her stuff is, she's a researcher. I mean, she is has so much substance and content, yet when you listen to her, she translates it. She makes it. She translates on human terms. And so I would say for her, she's very inspiring to me and her ability to do that. And her, Daring Greatly book, I liked so much. And the thing I really liked about her, I could hear her talking to me through the book. I could hear her voice. And I loved that. And I would never put myself in the same category with her. But I wanted that. I wanted it to be a business book, but also business casual and comfortable and accessible, and show and not lose myself, in the process.
Well, I absolutely follow everything that Dr. Brown does, so I'm a huge fan. So we're completely aligned, and I think that's interesting to be able to hear, to hear somebody that inspires you. That the goal is a little bit of the tone or the backdrop to your voice of your actual book on how people perceive it. So very, very interesting way to put that. So tell us again when the book comes out, the name of the book, and so we can just push
Thank
it out
you.
To the social networks.
Thank you. Yes, it's Make Waves, Be the One to Start Change at Work and in Life. And it is active. The launch date is Tuesday, May 6th. It's on Amazon now, and hopefully we'll be in your Barnes & Noble come Tuesday, and appreciate the interest and all the good conversation, for sure.
Of course. And where can people connect with you on social?
Yeah. They can connect with me on Twitter at Patty B. Johnson. I am also my author website is Patty B. Johnson. And that also connects into the People Results site. So it's all one and the same. Really, we're all connected. But on the Patty B. Johnson site, there's more information about the book. The other thing I would say is one of the things we're starting this week is that ability to nominate a wavemaker. And what I want to do on my blog is start to feature those wavemakers. And I know that those listening have wavemakers in your life. Who are they? Please go to my site, and I'd love to hear who they are. And we can you can also send them a link after and say, "Hey, I think you are a wavemaker and inspiring," and forward that on to them. And so we're starting some things like that this week. So that's another way people can get involved and participate.
Well, that's fantastic. Patty, thank you so much for coming and spending lunch with us. Can't wait to read the book. And I'm not just saying that. I probably will actually read it. So that's as committed as I can be. So I'm excited.
I love it. It was fun hanging out with you guys. I appreciate it.
Always a blast to hear kind of your perspective. Folks, guess what? We're happy and we're out. It might seem